Let me ask you a question. How much time have you spent seeking out self-help? How many books have you bought and maybe even actually read? Gurus have you listened to? Episodes of Oprah have you watched? Cosmo or Maxim magazines have you flipped through? Seeking a change in your life you desperately want and not really attaining it. All of these things could work and yet, in most cases, do not. That's the paradox of life. My name is Rayanna. We will uncover and ask the tricky questions, unabashed by political correctness. I may not have all the answers, but we will dig deep. We can laugh about the silliness of people and complain about the ridiculousness of life. One thing I've learned, you can't be all things to everyone, but I know for sure that you must be true to yourself. Welcome to the Just Be You podcast.
Well, I started out down a dirty road. Started out all alone. And the sun went down as I crossed the hill. And the town lit up. The world got still.
Don't miss the point. Missing the point is actually one of Aristotle's 13 fallacies of logic and argument. Others include begging the question. You know, those people that make statements of fact when you're arguing with them, and the statement that they've based it all on is actually an assumption that needs to be proven? Then there's card stacking, when only the pertinent facts related to one's argument are listed, leaving out opposing facts. And of course, the red herring, diverting the argument completely away from the intended direction. And non sequitur, when an irrelevancy shows up in the conclusion, like humans are mammals, Jackson is a mammal, therefore Jackson is human. Well, actually, Jackson could be a dog. These nuances of little language logic monsters occur all over our daily life. It happens in arguments, in a form of derailment from what you guys started to bicker about. And now you're all the way back at some failed family gathering when your man said something stupid, but the fight started over taking out the trash. Missing the point basically means drawing the wrong conclusion. Like, that him not taking out the trash means he doesn't love you. And the reality is, we miss the point all the time. You know, it's easy to get stuck on the lesson, to sit and wonder, trying to fit all the pieces together to make it make sense. For example, no pain, no gain is true in the gym, and discomfort is closely related to leaving your comfort zone. Thinking outside of the box can feel almost painful and cause your mind to try and claw its way back to the familiar paths of your mental process. We like familiar. Then, after my car accident, the physical therapist had to remind me that pain while stretching is not good. I was wincing and squirming in my seat, and he was concerned. So, what is the point? Well, sometimes no pain, no gain, and others, it's about understanding your limits. And it's always about how you approach, take on, and why you're even in that particular situation. It's about knowing what pieces are on the board, paying attention, and playing the game like your life depends on it. It does. I mentioned in my last podcast that I got mad at the gym, and it was symbolic of a greater deficiency in my attitude. Someone was pushing me out of my comfort zone, and I started crying, and I lost track of my reps, and I snapped back. I can't help the way my brain works. So I really do want to explore this. Can I change the way my brain works? Yes, damn right you can. Boot camp does it to young men and women all the time. It forces the body to do things like keep running after the mind decided it's too tired. According to thousands of hours of research, exercise, sleep, eating right, meditation, reading, and intentionally trying to alter your brain's functioning all really do actually work. Ask anyone who's recovered from a stroke or had to learn to walk again or talk again. Your brain is a muscle. Okay, it's not really a muscle, but it does act like one, and it performs better when the body has strong muscles, by the way. And in concert, these great aspects of our body work together like a symphony. Sure, science says that by the time you're in your 20s, you pretty much have your brain trained, but it's not over just yet. You just have to trick your brain out of its modus operandi. According to Tara Swart, a senior lecturer at MIT and author of Neuroscience for Leadership, our brain is inherently lazy and will always choose the most energy-efficient path if we let it. Which furthers my complaint, apparent on other podcasts. Turns out, people really are lazy. But we can do something about it. Hundreds of books and articles and lectures and TED Talks cover how to be a better you, to train your brain, master your life, etc. But all the tools, talks, guidebooks, lists, and gurus in the world can't change your brain without you getting in the driver's seat. First, you need to exert focused attention. Wishing is useless. It's like playing the lottery instead of putting money into your retirement fund. Odds are probably better that you will win the lottery than reaching your goals by chance, on your couch, just wishing life would hand you a win. Wishing is nice to start, but action, focused, and intentional pursuit is way more effective and dividends way higher. I know, there's never enough time in the day. How are you going to find time to elevate your game? Well, for the next 3 days, I bet if you jotted down every little thing you did, you would find some time. Some time sucking little distraction holes in your day. Cut those out and assign them to something better. Those 10 minutes you just wasted on Facebook or the Candy Crush stupid saga, that mindless sitcom rerun you've already seen 3 times? Yeah, stop doing those things. Or even just cut the time in half and take the remaining time to focus on what's next, what now. Want to be more organized? Make a list. Clean out the closet. Learn to meditate. Seriously, it helps. Want more health? Clean out the crap from your kitchen. If you want more out of life, you must be willing to do more with your time in a focused and intentional way. So get clear and get on with it. But focused attention is not enough. You must have deliberate repetition and practice. You have to stop doing the same old, whether it's the way you react, the inner dialogue, or activities that you've worn in like old shoes. No one truly mastered anything by just trying it once. So get at it every single day. It's easy to overlook this, but you need to create the right environment. If you are in a dead-end, destructive job, or you are miserable at it, or choose to be miserable at it every day, or if your house is a gosh darn disaster all the time and your car is full of old potato chip bags and junk mail, or you're maintaining relationships with people that suck the life out of you, then you are not living in a way that can sustain changing the way your mind works. It is really, really crucial to realize that the right environment includes people. Who are you surrounding yourself with? Stop for a second. Think about it. Who's on your team? Who knows you? Really knows you? Not just your top 5 Facebook likers. Who knows what you really want? Who knows who you are when no one's looking? Who gets you? And who notices when you're not quite yourself? Who loves you in a way that makes you a better person? Cares enough to say the things that you don't really want to hear? Off the top of my head, I think currently in my life, maybe 3 people know me like that. And that's only because I can't count my dog. 8 people know me pretty well, and I have lots of friends, and I love them all. And then we have lots of acquaintances. So, focus plus practice plus the right people in the right environment. That's the plan. Too tall in order? Nah, all those are within your control. I'm just curious, how much time do you spend pushing? Pushing your life to the next level? Do you just think about it, or do you chip away at it with a vision of what that blank slate of tomorrows will become? Some people can look at a canvas and see the painting before it's even there. Look at a slab of marble and know what it will become before they ever take the chisel and hammer to it. Can you take that same approach to your life? Do you even know what you're aiming at? Don't miss the point. It's not about how much you want it or wish it. It's a matter of how many moments you're willing to commit to it and how much we let fear run the show. Our minds do a sort of dance with our fears. If I am exercising and crafting my life, I have to watch out for the ways I rely on fear as a guidepost. One of my favorite little games I play on my mind to take the power out of the fears that drive me is, well, I call it a real woman. I'm a real woman is a sort of tongue-in-cheek way for me to call myself out for the fear-driven need to be all things all the time. Oh, I own a $500 purse. Now I'm a real woman. Oh, I'm getting married. Now I'm a real woman. I have multiple credit cards. Now I'm a real woman. I drive a sedan instead of a little coupe. I'm a real woman. Those things sound so silly, but that's what happens in my head. None of those things make me a real woman. I can become obsessed with the ways I think I should be that are sometimes unrealistic. For example, I want to stay home with the kids and I want to climb the corporate ladder. I should be married and own a home, but want to travel the world with no ties. I want a man who takes charge, but I am headstrong and opinionated. It takes practice to discern the wasteful assumptions we make about ourselves. It is really important to stop. Really, take a pause and appreciate where you are, where you've been, how far you have come. No matter where you are in the so-called grand scheme of things, I bet you have made great progress from where you began. No? You think you suffer from setbacks too extreme? You've been dealt a bad hand. Really? You decided self-pity was the most direct route through this? Get a fucking grip. We all start the game with some handicap. My mom always felt I had a disadvantage because I didn't have a father. I had 3. and she felt none of them really showed up the way they should have. So was it a disadvantage, or am I more resilient because of it? Whatever handicap you have, know that it made you that much more incredible to have come this far. Keep pushing. I get the choice to decide if that is my defect or a great gift, and you also get that choice. Born poor? Born with a learning disability? Oh, you mean you see the world differently? Some of our greatest discoveries, inventions, and theories are because of a so-called disadvantage in the mind of a massively creative person. So you're different. Your life, your pain, your problems, get over it. Make it your masterpiece. Your leg up on the competition. They will never see you coming. I spent the day with my family, which is always interesting. Families, you know, those weird conglomerate of people related by blood that are so vastly different in how they processed the pain of growing up, how they acclimated to the stress of the world's varying pressure. My mom recalled that it was always even age numbers that were the hardest for me. 12, she felt like she lost me. At 14 was when I knew I had pulled away from the world. 16, I rebelled and hated the whole world. 18, I was pretty sure I was an adult. I wasn't. And now that I'm an adult of sorts, with a 16-year-old that seems to resemble me, I have to cringe. And I have to have a heart full of compassion for my mother's strength. No one gets out of teenagerhood unscathed. You can't just close your eyes and hold on for the ride. You have to be willing as a parent to do things that are uncomfortable, like swallowing your pride, admitting when you're wrong, standing for what's right, and hoping to God that everyone makes it through. We teach what we live, not what we say. You know, I've always been obsessed with arriving. I used to think that my late 20s would be my best years. I was sadly disappointed by the arrival to adulthood. Those years in high school were not what I saw in the movies. But my early 20s were a wash. So when I hit 26, I decided, okay, my 30s, those are going to be the best years. And I had this idea that in my 30s, I would get married, buy a house, have a great career, and I would essentially arrive at all those visions I had as a young woman. In my 30s, I've already gotten married and left the marriage. I've gotten my so-called dream job and passed on it. I've left careers because the grass is greener, and I've moved across the country for a fresh start. And I am sure now that this is not what I thought arrived would look like. I think that's because my idea of said arrival was based on what others think of my status and station in life. I remember one day in my early 30s, I moved my daughter and I alone into a beautiful 3-bedroom house. It had hardwood floors throughout, a 2-car garage. It was around the corner from her elementary school and 10 minutes from my work. There were at least 25 beautiful rose bushes and a fenced backyard, great for a dog. And of course, barbecuing. And I was so excited. My mom was coming to visit. I was thrilled to show her my beautiful blue house. It was just like a house I could imagine her loving. She was going to be so proud of me. And I felt in that moment like I had arrived. So she gets there and I usher her down the front path, pointing out the lovely landscaping, the sweet bougainvillea bush under the kitchen window. And she steps one step inside the door, looks around and states, "Well, this place needs some work." And for some reason, I was crushed. I told myself I wasn't bothered by it, but I think in many ways, I just wanted her to hug me and say, "Baby, congratulations. This house is a beautiful, fresh start for you and your little girl." And perhaps that's what she meant. But what settled into my mind was a lack, my lack. I wasn't enough, still, after all these years. And now that I'm a number of years from that day, I think she was perhaps being factual. It's true, the paint inside needed to be redone. My furniture was all mismatched. I had just left a relationship, so only half of the prior apartment had come with me. Or maybe I placed too much meaning on whether or not she approved. I mean, who really cared? I loved that house. It was awesome, but I missed the point. I took that moment and I ran with it. I gave it meaning. And the meaning I assigned was that I was not enough. I was still failing. So my quote, best years, started with a feeling like I was still trying to arrive. And honestly, I don't know if it's ever ended. Next in my 30s was my marriage. Oh, it was another one of those things you think you get to tick that box on. Here's what happened semi-briefly. We dated, and initially I really only wanted to go out with him because I'd heard he was good in bed. You know, girls talk a little. And I knew he wasn't really the kind of guy you try and make a relationship with. I had just moved into that beautiful blue house. I had a great career, a new Toyota Highlander, and a brand new lease on life. I wanted to date someone fun, who's good in bed with no strings. And I'd heard he knew how to dance. That sounded perfect. I'd been a serial monogamist prior to that. I figured, hey, let's have some fun. So we dated, and all was fine. Fun, frisky, dinners, and mini vacays. And then, you know, we just didn't see eye to eye on some things. So he came over one night and broke up with me, and I said, I agree. And he left. And that was fine. I washed my hands and walked away. No big deal. That was my plan all along. Now, I'd be lying if I didn't admit I was a little sad about it. I mean, I shed a few tears that night, and then I went out with someone else. Seriously, I was not brokenhearted. I knew the time with him was exactly what it turned out to be. Now, this topic gets its own episode someday, but I was on an online dating site about 2 months later. And suddenly, he's among the gents the app is suggesting were a good fit for me. And no sooner did I see this than a message arrives in my inbox. And he is saying, hi, you look great. Hope you're having fun on here. Want to talk sometime? No, I thought to myself. And hi, yeah, you too, was what I said. A week later, he's texting me, asking me to please meet him for a bite after work. I did, and it was lovely. We laughed and caught up on all of our kids' stuff we had missed over the last couple months, and as we left, he turned to me and he started crying. You are the woman I want to spend the rest of my life with. I didn't realize it until we walked away. Please try this with me again, for real this time. Okay, now ladies, you know that that's like the number one thing a woman ever wants to hear. That touches a part of you that all those once upon a time stories you grew up with spoke to. That is the idealized love we yearn for, are trained for, and plan for our whole adult life. And he said it. And I thought, in that moment, I had arrived. And the way he adored me for the next year was absolutely magnificent. The wedding straight out of a magazine. The dress, oh my God, the dress. But you know what I forgot? A leopard can't hide his spots. And people, they don't really change. I mean, you can change, but most people don't change. I'm not being crabby here. He was a 46-year-old man at the time and had been that way for so long. I was a fool to think he would stay the way he was when he came humbled back to me. And he was a fool to think I would stay in suffering once his inherent laziness returned. Not laziness around the house, but in the relationship. I remember vividly the night a few months after the wedding when he said, well, we'll save your orgasms for special occasions. What? Because I don't come easy? It's only going to be important when it's convenient for you? So wait, I can do whatever's necessary for you to have an orgasm every time, but because I take a solid 15 minutes to get there sometimes, that's too much? Please no. Orgasms were not the last straw, but sex, in my humble opinion, is of utmost importance to the sanctity of a romantic relationship. Otherwise, you're just friends. And hey, there's great value in that too. I love having a best friend. But in order to be happy in a relationship, I need, capital N, need, great sex. Meaningful and fun sex. Please don't put my orgasm on a waiting list. Okay, the real demise though was twofold. He got nasty with my daughter, a 13-year-old, and he called her a cunt. And he loved having a secret. It turned him on. And secrets he had. But going into it, I said he could do most anything he wanted as long as I was kept in the loop or included. And we had that agreement. It was a lot of freedom for him, but apparently it wasn't enough. And eventually, I was just done. I don't mind letting a man do his manly things. I actually like it. I just don't want to be blindsided by it. I want to be important enough to be included. So I left, and that's that. Marriage failed. I either wasn't strong enough to stand there and take it, or I was strong enough to know I deserve better. I think it's the latter. I guess we will see. It's taken a few years for me to stop reeling from the fallout of that part of my life. And now that I'm speedily racing to my 40s, I've noticed I've started to idealize it the next 10 years. That maybe that's when everything will be okay. So that I'm clear, here is me, not missing the point. If I really pay attention to what I've learned of myself, the world, the lessons, the people I choose to let in, if I'm honest, the 30s have been great. What awesome moments, beholden to no one. I exercised great power of choice. I wielded magnificent grace. And I also fell on my own sword in a way that humbles me. It's the closest I've ever been to being a real woman. And isn't that what growing into something more requires? There's nothing wrong with failing. It's about how I got back up. How did I approach the next relationship? How do I feel about myself? Will I ever let someone backburner my orgasms ever again? Hell no. Is my daughter's safety and success number one? Yes. Can I walk away with my head up? Check. Does failing in one area mean everything is a loss? Nope. So hear me out. If you feel like this dead-end anything, relationship, job, moment, is the be-all, end-all, it's not. It's just not. Today I know that I have arrived. Each moment I felt that, for a moment, it was true. It's just that moments passed, which is why we must keep going. We must be on our own path. We must keep going further. Take the time to sit back. Notice this moment. This car you were in, or the beautiful iPhone with technology that was unimaginable 10 years ago. Pay attention to the beauty and the scenery as you drive, or the way you decorated the room you're in. What a gift. Pay even closer attention to how much you miss, what escapes you, and what you take for granted, and then don't. Stop being so distracted by bills, by politics, by drama, and the mundane. The point is this, all that stuff you worried about last week, if you're listening to this, that means the world didn't end because of it. Every once in a while, you have to sit back and notice that you have arrived over and over again. Don't miss the moment. Don't miss the point. In a world where being emotional is unacceptable and working in a culture where I must be on all the time, it feels like it's never okay to make mistakes. It's basically not okay to be me, which requires a constant, endless stream of energy to control my emotions. And the target moves, so perfection is impossible. Basically, I've become my own enemy, and my insecurity tells me the world will never accept me as I am. So, essentially, I allow myself to feel like I'm never enough. No matter how many wins, I feel each failure as if no progress counts. I think that's part of our brain's evolutionary functioning. Like, we remember the fear of wild beasts in the jungle because if we forget, we might try and cuddle with them. But it's just not relevant these days. Do I or we attract into our life that which we most fear or need to learn? Is that why I have this staring me in the face like two children in a staring contest? Am I able to learn the lesson? Am I missing the point? If the point is progress and growth, then this is an excellent challenge, like an agility obstacle course. Just when you think you've got it, you round the corner and are forced to crawl on your belly through ice-cold pools of insecurity. And then, oh my God, you made it. You shake it off. Beam a big grin at your cohorts. Whoops. Next obstacle has electric barbed wire and, well, you can't turn back now. So, what's the point? Do it for you. Do it because it makes you stronger, faster, better. Do it because it's what's right. If it's none of those things, then don't. And don't miss this moment. Just be you.
Some say life will beat you down and break your heart, steal your crown. So it started out for God knows where. I guess I'll know when I get there. Around the clouds, what goes up must come down.
Just Be You podcast is written and produced by Rayanna Morrow and co-produced and edited by Dana Buckler of Hidden Productions in Ocala, Florida. You can always contact me with questions or comments at justbeyoupodcast@gmail.com. Links to all of our social media are available on this episode's show notes. If you're enjoying the show, please subscribe and or leave a review on whatever podcast platform you use to listen. Once again, thank you for listening to the Just Be You podcast.